Hi, and welcome to Detox, Talks the Detox, a podcast where we talk to some of the world's finest leaders about their detox rituals and how they maintain continuity in a world of noise and chaos. How they make sure that the criticism that the world puts on them doesn't affect their insight and they still continue to perform as well as they do. Thanks for tuning in. This is Kunal Sundaramani, and you are listening to Detox, Talks the Detox.
We have Adam Pollock on the podcast. Adam is incredible. He co-founded Accept.Inc, which got acquired a year ago. In addition to which, he already started as a cadet in the US Army, dropped out of Harvard. And yeah, his life seems like five lives. He's done so much incredible stuff. Thank you so much for taking your time.
Thank you. Great to be here. And love your podcast and happy to be a resource and learn from you. So super excited. Thank you, Kunal.
Before we dive in, what's your journey been like? Because it's so broad and so deep at the same time.
Yeah, no, it's definitely been a heck of a ride. So I guess backing up, grew up in Long Island, New York. Did not come from a entrepreneurial family per se. Certainly nothing to do in tech. Went to, grew up kind of around the real estate mortgage industry. My dad is a mortgage attorney out in New York, so kind of through him got an early start, I would say, into real estate. Interestingly, I did not want to be an entrepreneur growing up, but I would say by the time I was in junior year or senior year, something changed where I was like, you know, I've been trying to get into a great school. I've been trying to get a great job and, you know, at a, you know, more traditional investment bank or consultant type thing. And I'm like, I felt like I got to a point where I was just like living life by somebody else's measure. And I really wanted to think, you know, if I was like 80 years old, how would I want to do this? How would I want to have lived life? What would I want to have spent my short, you know, life force on this world doing? And, you know, that kind of reframed my perspective. And that's where kind of entrepreneurship began making, I guess, more headway and taking up more headspace in my mind. By the time I got to sophomore year, I found one of my amazing co-founders, Nick, and I was looking in the real estate kind of mortgage space. This was like 2016. And, you know, you'd seen a lot of innovation up until that point in like real estate search, Zillow, Trulia, and all that. But you had not done a lot, seen a lot with like transactions. Like, how do you simplify the transaction? How do you make that more frictionless? And importantly, how do you make that more fair? And just by virtue of my dad and some of my own background experience in real estate and mortgages, that's when I said, you know what? School's been here for a couple hundred years. It'll be here for a couple hundred more. And like, let's go out and let's see if I can, you know, leave school at the end of my sophomore year to co-found what would become Accept.Inc, which was a fintech mortgage platform that helped agents and mortgage lenders turn buyers into cash buyers so everybody can compete and win for some of the most desirable competitive homes in the country. And it was very much a five-year overnight success story. A lot of ups and downs and learned a ton. Grew a lot of, you know, as a person, made some my fair share of mistakes and but nonetheless, so grateful that we made the jump. Really obviously thrilled with the outcome and also grateful to be continuing my chapter here at HomeLight, which was a company that you, like you said, acquired Accept just over a year ago. So crazy ride, but that's a 4-minute backstory, Kunal.
That's incredible. So ups and downs, I think that's a game of startups, but I think there's some downs that help you even end ups. So like, yeah. What was that one incredible down that like just gave you some thing that stays with you, just helps you everywhere, whether it's up or down?
Yeah, that's a great question. Just one. I'm like, man, I might need a drink. I can go through a bunch. But one that I remember really happened early on that was particularly impactful. It was, I remember, you know, I guess framing it a little bit, you know, everybody talks about how do you make the right hires? Like, how do you build the right culture? And there's like a ton of articles on all that stuff. I can't, you know, give a better answer than most of the people you can find online. But, you know, I think rarely people talk about, well, how do you fire somebody, right? How do you fire somebody? How do you tell somebody they no longer have a job? How do you tell somebody who has kids and a family, dependents and all this stuff, hey, you no longer have a job? And, you know, that was probably one of my first threshold moments where as an entrepreneur. And I remember we were just starting out we just raised our first seed round. We just finished, we did the Y Combinator program. You know, at that point, I was also lucky enough to be part of the Thiel Fellowship. So I had all the, you know, a ton of support, which is to say that I had all the support and experience, but nothing was quite prepared me to fire my first team member. And I remember who she was and what happened. And ultimately, she just wasn't a culture fit, and she wasn't, you know, available when we needed her to be available. And, you know, I got to a point where it was like we had to let her go because she was, it was becoming just toxic for her and also toxic for the company. And we were like a team of 10 at this point. I think this was like late 2019 or beginning 2020, or actually it was March of 2020, I think, when we ultimately fired her. And, you know, at first I didn't want to fire her. At first I found every reason not to fire her. And at some point it just got so bad where I'm like, you know what, screw it, you know, fuck it, basically. She has to go. And I called her into my office and I said, which was like basically a cubicle. And I said, look, you know, today's your last day at, you know, at the company, you know, here's your severance, blah, 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 blah. And she just broke down crying. And it was, that was just horrible. It was just like, I took that extremely personally. And I felt like in some ways I'd let her down and my team down. And it turns out that I actually did. But it wasn't because the reason that I thought at that moment, it wasn't because I fired a team member who wasn't performing as we needed her to. That's part of the job. What I had not done was actually leading up to me firing her. I had once actually stepped in and said, hey, so-and-so, you're not performing to standard. We need you to improve in these key areas. And my big learning and my big takeaway from that is if you're going to let somebody go, like if you're going to fire somebody, they should never be surprised that they're going to be fired, because they should always have a heads up. They should always have clear performance metrics and how they can improve, how they will be judged and evaluated. And if and only if they cannot perform, then you should proceed to let them go. But here I was telling her she doesn't have a job, and I had not really given her any warning of my dissatisfaction, because I had for so long been pushing off the decision until it became such a burning urgent issue where I just, you know, let her go. So that firing my first person, in short, was probably my first real threshold moment as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, that is hard.
Yes. Yeah. But you know, get through it, you learn from it. And I like to think I did the next one and the ones thereafter way better.
But I love what you said. Like if you're ever firing someone, it shouldn't be a surprise to them, like that you're firing them. And I think that just extends beyond business, even into life. Like when you're telling someone something, it shouldn't be a surprise to them as if.
Oh, it should be so much heads up. And in this case, it wasn't because I didn't want to. You know, it felt like I was doing the right thing because I kept giving her a second chance and a third chance and a fourth chance and a fifth chance. And, you know, it got to the point where it just broke. Like the fact that I didn't just clearly communicate my dissatisfaction with her up front, that was my version of letting her down. And even though it was well intended why I wasn't communicating with her, in the sense that I was giving her, I would say, too many second chances to improve, to say the least.
Absolutely. Beyond that, like something we've really enjoyed talking about is like with some moments in life, which are like everything is messed up moments. Like when you're just sitting there and you're like, okay, this is so bad. Everything is messed up. I don't know what to do. And like, I think we all have those moments. What was it for you?
Oh yeah. There's a great expression. I think that Y Combinator said, we feel moments, we're fucked, it's over. Basically, yeah, like definitely my fair share with you moments too. I would say probably one of the biggest ones that I had was earlier on in the company's life cycle. We had, you know, we were in the real estate mortgage space, and COVID had really just like happened, right? So cities were literally closing down. San Francisco had closed down. We just raised, I think like $6 million on top of a few million that we raised prior. Closed a credit facility, done all this really good stuff. And it finally felt like life was like clicking. The company was clicking. We were getting a team together. We had initial signs of product market fit. And, you know, here's COVID, which like many companies, you know, and certainly found a surprise to us. But what was interesting is that because real estate is definitely a physical, you know, activity in some ways, right? There's home showings and all those things. It was particularly jarring or damning for the real estate industry at first, because there was no more open houses because people thought they were going to get sick, which definitely happened too. And like the entire real estate industry came to a halt. title companies weren't open, so closings weren't initiated. So there was just all of these things. And then one of our credit providers ended up saying, look, we're not funding any more deals until this COVID thing is over. And it just felt like, you know, you get this moment where you're like, you're on the top of the world, you raised a bunch of money, you're feeling good about the business, and you've got all the pieces you need to start scaling it. And all of a sudden this COVID comes in, and literally there's like every real estate transaction is 100% on ice. So you're like, man, this is it. We might as well just like return the money and like whatever and be done with this, because this is not going to work. It's not like we can just make this into software and hope sell it online. I think that was probably the biggest one. You know, long story short, you know, real estate, you know, after that brief pause during COVID actually had a moment. So COVID was, if anything, a tailwind, not a headwind long term for us, which was one of those surprising things. And I'm, you know, grateful for, I guess, lady luck in that regard. But it was crazy, man. I seeing the real estate market just totally close, you know, right when everything felt like everything was coming together was just, you know, I got a pit in my stomach, I guess, just thinking about it.
I can feel the gravity of that moment. Like, what was your self-talk that time?
I think the way that I dealt with it was I tried to almost reason with it. Like, I'd be like, oh, it's not my fault because, you know, a pandemic happened and whatever. And I think for the first few weeks that worked, right? And it made me feel okay. Like, hey, look, you know, everybody's going through this and, you know, a pandemic is a pandemic and hopefully a once in a generation event. And, you know, I can't blame myself for that. But, you know, that only works so long, because what ended up happening is, like, I thought about the actions that I was going to have to take, you know, right size the company, which is just a diplomatic way of saying I was going to have to lay more people off or fire people. And which is, we did that to some extent. And that was really disheartening. That was really hard because we'd worked hard to hire these people. Many of them had actually taken risks to leave their current company to join ours, with the excitement of changing the way homes were bought and sold for the better. And here I was basically laying them off because of COVID. So I felt that I was pretty bitter. And that's why, you know, simply stating that external influences, i.e. a pandemic, wasn't necessarily sufficient to get me over the hump. What ended up, though, kind of helping me through that, and I guess the ultimate self-talk, was, you know, all the people that joined this company, they joined this company because they wanted to join this company. Many of them knew the risks. Many of them knew the traditional risk of a startup, to say nothing of a pandemic. And, you know, they joined us because we were doing something worthwhile, and because we were, despite the fact that we were a risky startup, but everybody knew going into it that is the nature of joining an early stage company at that time. And I think that helped the most. It's because everybody I hired, they were adults, right? You know, they knew what they were getting into. I was certainly clear on like the risks of joining a startup, as excited as I was. I certainly like to think I was clear. And once you kind of like, I wouldn't say you remove the responsibility from it, but you contextualize it with the fact that, you know, these are team members that join you with agency because they believe in your mission with the company and long past that with the company. That kind of made me breathe a whole lot easier. And I was excited because in many cases, after the real estate market opened up, we were able to hire many of those people back. And some of them became our best team members. So I guess the learning points there is, you know, you can only control what you can control. There's X factors like the pandemic. And then as it pertains to your team, which to me was kind of this huge weight on me in terms of responsibility, was just recognize that, yes, you do have a responsibility to your team members, a good responsibility for a good work environment, to be supportive and do your best. But at the end of the day, there's risks in joining a startup. Everybody knows the risks, and not taking full responsibility for the outcome was, you know, helpful, I guess, in many ways.
That's amazing. Like, it's hard to put in words for people who haven't like either been a part of a startup or started a startup. It's just so personal as a founder, everything that's happening. In your case, when all of this was happening, say beyond that, on an emotional level, what was the process? Like, when you know what you need to do, but there's all this emotional baggage that's building up from everything that's happening.
So I would say that one of the most important things that I did is I found a couple things, habits, that helped me feel like I was always playing a little bit of offense. And before I go into what those were, I'll start with like what not detoxing looked like for me. Working 7 days a week and working all hours during those 7 days, and not being present in the moment, whether it was grabbing dinner with my girlfriend or family time or all that good stuff. So just working until you're just totally burnt out from both ends. And you know, I think that was, you know, a good part of my entrepreneurial experience was spent in that state. At some point though, especially once I was like a couple of years in, I'm like, man, I can't keep going like this. This isn't living. This is just like existing for your company. And you know, there's a component, I guess, where maybe that's what you have to do at some time, but it got to a point where that just was not the lifestyle that I wanted to live. I didn't feel good. I didn't like how I was living and all that stuff. So I ended up implementing like small little things that helped me deal with the stress and feel like I was investing in myself and, to use your word, to detox. So like the first thing was that I went to the gym every morning, even if it was 30 minutes. And like, without a doubt, no excuse. I literally put my shoes and my shorts right next to my bed. So there was no excuse for me not to literally slap them on and get downstairs and, you know, lift some weights, go on the treadmill or both. That was the first thing. The second thing was that when I went to get my morning cup of coffee, which to me is like kind of a morning ritual at this point, certainly at that point and to this day, I would leave my phone behind. Who wouldn't bring my phone? I would just grab my cup of coffee. Nothing could interrupt that moment for me, you know, getting my stock roast, whatever, from the Starbucks barista and, you know, distract me from just the pleasure of having like your first cup of coffee in the morning, being uninterrupted by work, life, and all the other urgent and important things and some urgent, non-important things that I would otherwise be distracted by having my phone literally glued to me. So that was the second thing that I implemented. And then another thing that I used to detox was at the end of the day, after like 9 o'clock, I basically put my phone on do not disturb. I said, nope, nobody can reach me. Like nobody, you know, after 9 o'clock, all those hours are my own. Nobody can reach out. Like, which is to say, like I forced myself to set boundaries. You know, it's kind of self-reinforcing because it was scary to do that. And then once I did it, it just changed the way that I interacted with life, with my company, and ultimately helped me be the best version of myself.
I love it. When you're in a rough patch, things are going wrong, probably not to the extreme of everything is messed up, but things are starting to go in a bad fashion. Like just personally to stay focused, like any hacks, any tips, like whether it's working out, anything that you do, meditation, anything that helps you get back at it and stay detoxed?
Yeah. So, and I think behind that too, you know, it was like a prioritization, right? Because like so much stuff, you want to stay centered because certainly as a founder, and I would say even, you know, as a CEO, like you will face countless things that seem urgent, important, and all that stuff. So there was two things that I did that I found was super helpful. The first one was, I think they call it type one and type two decisions, right? Which I think I might be conflating them, but basically the point of it was, you know, type one decision, let's say, is a decision where if you make it, you can't go back. Right. So these are like typically decisions. If you like you do this, there's no edit undo. This is important strategic stuff. Type two decisions are like, look, if we get it wrong, we can kind of with minimal damage undo that mistake. So first was like evaluating, is this a type one decision or is this a type two decision? And if it was a type two decision, I wouldn't spend too long doing it because you know what? At some point, like if you can get out of this decision or undo the damage that it does, if you don't make the right one, spending too much time on it really isn't important. And if it was a type one, which it had gravity, like that's the one where I would spend a fair bit of time being like, okay, let me really try to double check this, cross my T's, dot my I's and all that good stuff. So I guess prioritizing what types of decisions that you're going to make that are going to have the most enduring impact on your company, good or bad. If it's going to have like kind of a semi-permanent impact, that's a type one decision. That means you have to give that a bunch of time. And if it's something that you can undo like a week, a month, or a year later, well, then it probably makes sense to just not spend too much time thinking about it because you get kind of paralysis by analysis at some point. So that's the first thing that I did. The second thing that I did that was super helpful to help center me and prioritize what was important, I asked myself a question in the morning and I forgot who told me this, but I thought it was such a brilliantly simple, you know, question to ask yourself was every morning I asked myself, all right, what can I not fail at today? What can I absolutely not fail at today? What are the things absolutely have to do? And I would typically limit that to like three things. And by saying, what can I not fail at today? I knew that if I just got these things done, you know, I would have a successful, productive day. If I got anything more done than that, that's all cream on top, right? That's all additional good stuff. But by asking myself what I absolutely cannot fail at today, I was like force ranking or forcing myself to force rank. Here are the activities that I have to do. So that could have been a board meeting. That could have been a acing an all hands meeting with my team. That could have been, you know, an investor pitch or something. Though, like once I picked out those things, like if that was the only thing I got down, I considered that a success. And why I think that's important is because when you just kind of go through the day, just jumping from one activity to the next without defining what success looks like, you don't ever feel like you really had a productive day. You kind of just feel like you're constantly playing defense against all these things that are happening to you. But by defining up front, calling your shot and saying, here's what I have to do today. Here's what I cannot fail at. It kind of gives you a permanent mistest for that day about what success means. So that's another, I guess, strategy that I use to keep myself balanced, centered, and prioritize what I absolutely needed to do.
That one is gorgeous. I love it. Like, what can I not fail at? Because we might have had a great day, but just because the way your program, there's always more things, you feel like you've not got anything done.
Yeah, exactly. And it's because, you know, you're ambitious, right? If you're in this business, you're almost... certainly, like you're type A, you're ambitious, you want to, you know, the future can't come soon enough. And those are all really great positive things, right? But they have some negative consequences or derivatives sometimes. And like, if you have not defined success up front and almost in a way where you can lay out again, like the three things that you must get done, or in my case, cannot fail at, you're never going to feel like you've done enough. So that's why even to this day, I often find myself saying, okay, what do I absolutely have to get done today? And if that was it, I could do it. And if it took me an hour to get those things done, cool. Not that I would take the day off, but I would know at least that I had succeeded. And if I didn't hit those three things, you know, I'd have to own up to that and figure out why I couldn't get those three things done.
Love it. What about stress? Like the stress that constantly builds up, like when you're working on any, like working in a large company, working on building a large company, there's just so much stress that builds up. Like what's your go-to to like detox from that stress?
You know, I think at that point, so my company got to 70 people. So, you know, to me was, you know, around 70 people, 70 team members. But I would say that the biggest things that ways that I managed stress, again, was knowing that I had taken some time for myself, right? And just personally, things that didn't benefit the company, right? Specifically, like, again, sounds silly, but working out, right? That's a selfish activity in many ways because it's only for me. You know, my company was not better off directly, at least because I worked out, eating right, and even turning my phone off. Doing things where I felt like I wasn't like almost martyring myself for the benefit of the company was always the things that I relied upon to help me know that, yes, I have stress. Yes, this is important, but I also have time carved out for me to manage, you know, whatever little life I had at that point outside of work. The other thing that I found was really helpful for me with stress was actually realizing that when you're super stressed out, and you're dealing with like a complicated problem. Like it could be like I remember there was one problem, which was like, we could not get agents who are our distribution to consumers, to real estate agents specifically, to use us because they wanted to work with their mortgage lender, their own mortgage lender that they trusted and was local and they, you know, inevitably went fishing with and their kids grew up with and all that stuff. So we were trying to solve this problem because our entire business was basically relied upon using agents as a cheap source of distribution to get our product, the cash offer, into buyers and sellers' hands. And here was a challenge of a fundamental nature in the sense that agents, yeah, they used us when they needed us, but by default, they would try to use their local lender and all that good stuff. So basically what I remember, this was like really stressful because we were going into fundraising and we really had to have an answer to this. And I remember being like, you know what? I don't have an answer to this. I'm stressed out about this. I'm just going to like take a walk, go outside. And it sounds so silly, but getting space for the problem that you're solving, giving yourself the grace to get some space, that was super key for me. And I think that helped me, I think, not just get to make a decision, but come to the right decision in the right way. And I remember I actually came back from a walk. And I was asking myself that same question and it came to me, well, you know, and my co-founder at that point, and we were like, you know, we should open up our platform, not just to any real estate agent, but to any mortgage lender. And that led to a step function change in the business. And also I think built a whole bunch of value for us. So That was exciting. And I guess the punchline there is remember your daily rituals, give yourself space from things that benefit the company, do things that are purely for yourself. And when you inevitably dealt with this crazy problem, you're stuck between that proverbial rock and the hard place. Sometimes the best way through is not by just toughing it out, but by giving yourself some time to just not think about that particular problem and trusting in yourself that you will find that answer. So I guess that was another way I handled the stress.
I love it. So moving to the rapid fire round, couple quick questions, answer in the least possible time.
Okay, let's do it.
Apples or oranges?
Apples.
Apples or mangoes?
Mangoes.
Apple or Android?
Apple.
MacBook or Windows?
MacBook.
Unconventional but a piece of electronic that really helps you out?
I have a Whoop.
One productivity hack under 10 words that changed your life?
The question, what can I not fail at today?
What one line changed your life? Like a quote?
Everyone lives two lives. The second one begins when you realize you only have one.
If you looked at the mirror and you, as scary as the sound, and the guy in the mirror said something back to you, what would you want that to be?
You lived a life well lived. You did it.
Your favorite movie?
The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Your favorite music?
Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Favorite city in the world?
Probably Boston.
One piece of advice, super generalized, that you'd give to anyone if you did not know them, you don't know their age, nothing about them, but this is something they must know.
Don't forget to look it up.
In 3 steps, today there's a fire, there's a new problem. What goes through your mind and what do you do?
First thing is make sure you know the true problem. So keep asking why until you're like, okay, this is the problem. Second, identify and rank what you think are the best solutions to that problem. And then 3, iterate as fast as you possibly can through that list. Get into the field, get off the bench.
And what's your self-talk when you get a call? Adam, there is a fire. What's the first thing that goes through your mind?
Is this urgent, important and important, not urgent and not important, or urgent and important? And based on that, I will figure out how to react and when.
Love it. Thank you so much for taking out the time. This was such an honor and privilege.
Hey, thank you, brother. I appreciate your time, man. And I'm looking forward to seeing you in LA or up in San Francisco, dude.
You just heard an episode on the Detox Podcast. Do not forget to subscribe on your favorite streaming platform, whether it is Spotify or iTunes. We are there.